around a little bit. Detroit did, because I was a pitcher, then I was a first baseman, then I was an outfielder. Then they were doing it all over again. So it was just hard to get anything done. And then finally, I guess it was 1967, they finally let me alone, just let me pitch. And that's when things started happening. So at that point, you know, I mean, it's you think, well, now I'm on the right track. And then things did kind of fall in place after that.
You finally got up to the majors and pitched a couple of games with them late in 68. Did you think that you were going to be able to make your mark with this great Tigers team, or did you think you were going to have trouble cracking their pitching?
At that time, you really don't think about cracking anything, just making the team, you know, and wherever they want to use you, you're just tickled to death to try and be there, you know, because when I was first called up, actually I pitched in 1966, which nobody ever has a record of it, but I was called up for a month in 66 and pitched a couple of times in relief. But again, that's the whole deal. It's just a matter of getting there. Because I signed as an outfielder. You know, I thought at one point in time, geez, this is going to be great. I'll be a big league outfielder. And then all of a sudden, you're in the big leagues as a pitcher. It's unusual. And even at that point, I didn't have any clue about how to pitch. I was still learning how to pitch. So it was just, for me, to get there at that time, it was a major accomplishment. You know, you don't want to think too far ahead, because I didn't know what I had to give. I was still learning.
They sold you to the Yankees a week after your birthday. Did you ever talk to the Yankees? Did they tell you they had any plans for you, or that you were going to be protected in the expansion draft? Or?
Well, when I was drafted by Kansas City, I got a call from the Yankees. They were real nice about it. They said they were trying to sneak me through the draft, but because I was involved in a trade, I wasn't a real Yankee, so they felt obligated to protect certain players in their organization, which I can understand. And after that round, at least the way it was explained to me, they were going ahead and protect me then, but it was too late. Kansas City grabbed me, so...
Yeah, they took you out of the way.
I always wanted to be a Yankee, because Mickey Mantle was obviously my idol, and I just never... You know, never got the chance.
You were on paper for about 2 weeks.
That was about it, yeah. Yeah.
So were you disappointed when the Royals took you then?
No, well, when I found out, first of all, when I was called and they said you were drafted by Kansas City, and I'm going, Kansas City? The first thing I think of, I grew up in Southern California, so I'm thinking mules and horses and cows and stuff like that. I didn't realize how nice Kansas City was. Anyway, it was a beautiful city. And in fact, when I was traded eventually to the Pirates, it was nice to come here. But I hated leaving there because I liked that area so much. It's a beautiful area. So I lived there for 4 years, bought a house, and then eventually sold it and bought one here.
You began 69 in the minors. That had to be disappointing not to make the opening day roster.
It was, but... Yeah, I hurt my arm, so I had to stay behind in spring training, and it's funny because, well, it wasn't funny at the time, but the guy that was the trainer for Kansas City then, Billy Jones, who's now with the Sacramento Kings basketball team?
Yeah.
I think it is. Jones is one of the best trainers I had ever been around, before, after, ever. And this guy was incredible. He saved my career because he started giving me these exercises to strengthen my arm and give me muscle tone in my shoulder. I mean, I didn't pitch an inning in spring training because my arm hurt so bad. So I stayed behind. It wasn't as bad when you don't make the team because of an injury. Then there's nothing you can do. But if I couldn't have made that Kansas City team with talent, then I would have been, yeah, it would have been a real problem, because I think I was pretty good, but you know, when you're injured, there's just nothing you can do.
Do you remember anything about the spring training boycott that year? Marvin Miller asking the players not to sign contracts.
That was 69?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it didn't. See, that was one of the things that really didn't affect me because I didn't make the club. I mean, it did, but it didn't. And I think what happened with our team, any expansion team, especially the young players like me, I had no clue what was going on. We had Mo Drabowski as our player representative, and Mo's a very bright person. He knew all the inner workings of all that stuff, and you have to kind of rely on his guidance as a young guy. Marvin would come and talk to us like he does every other team, and then afterwards Mo would say, well, this guy's got, you know, he's got a handle on everything, and for the sake of the union, this is probably the way we should go as a team. So it was easy to do that.
Mo was good. I met him the other day.
Yeah, he's outstanding. He's outstanding.
I did go through. I have about 16 or 18 of your starts.
Oh, God.
Cataloged from that year. I know it's probably painful. Probably painful. Yeah, when you get killed by the A's one day. But
you had quite
a few tough losses that year. You were really...
Yeah, I wasn't as bad as the numbers show. In Oakland, though, there was somebody in that dugout. See, the one thing that was tough for me to learn as a big league pitcher was not to be afraid to throw the ball over the plate. In the minor leagues, I had good enough stuff, but I was still learning how to pitch. And all of a sudden, you're thrown into the big leagues, and you think, well, I'm going to have to take my ability up a level. But you really don't. All you have to do is throw the ball over the plate. I mean, it's rather simple, but it took a learning process. And the quicker you learn this stuff, the more successful you're going to be. So Oakland, I was always wild when I pitched. I mean, my first couple of years, I just couldn't throw the ball over the plate because there was a, you know, I was trying to hit a corner, and now you're behind 2-1, 0-1, or 2-0 all the time. And there was some guy in the Oakland A's dugout, I would love to this day to know who it was. Before I threw a pitch, I could hear him yell, 0-1. And I'd just stand out there and I'd get pissed off and I'd throw ball one. And then I'd hear, 0-2. You know, and I'd throw ball. And I'd try to find out who it was, but I could never pick the guy out. I'd look over there and I could never catch whoever it was. Because if it was one of the guys that was playing, I would have drilled the son of a bitch. But I never found it to this day. I don't know who it was, but that really bothered me. And that was my problem that year. I could not throw strikes. On an occasion, when I got ahead of hitters, and I pitched some pretty good ball games, but I was still learning to throw the ball over the plate, trying to.
There was one spot here where in the space of three starts, you gave up 4 earned runs in 25 innings and took 3 losses.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of team we had. I remember one game, we were in Baltimore, I was winning 1-0. I lost it in the bottom of the ninth, 2-1.
Kurt Moat.
Yeah, the home run. That little stinky son of a gun. And I had a no-hitter against the Yankees. I don't know if it was that same time period in this, but my first start in Yankee Stadium, I had a no-hitter going into the ninth inning, 1-0. They tied it in the ninth. I lost it in the 12th, 2-1. So, you know, but again, that was the learning process. I didn't know how to finish a game. I didn't know how to lock things up. I'd get to the eighth or ninth inning with a 1 or 2 run lead thinking, I wonder if I can win this, you know. And then later on, you learn that you
can. With the Pirates, you learned that.
Yeah.
But, your character as a battler was established then. You just couldn't get the results.
Right. I had to battle because I had a good arm, but I didn't have the mind to know what to do with it at that time. Later on, I kind of blended the both of them together. The arm started declining a little bit, but my mind caught up fast enough to where I was successful. Then it became, you know, the last maybe 3 or 4 years where you lose a little bit of stuff, but that's where the brain kicks in a little more to try and keep things balanced out. So you had to battle with some of the stuff I went out there with, believe me.
It had to be frustrating, though. I found a quote from you later on where you described that Kansas City year as being a converted outfielder trying to win with a Triple-A team?
Well, we were all Triple-A, most of us, I should say. Plus, I think I learned then, too, when you're, for the young players, trying to establish yourself in the big leagues, we had a lot of greedy guys. And I'm a believer today that most of the time a pitcher needs his team more than the team needs a pitcher. And you have a pretty good ball club, you can win with anybody out there, but if you don't have a good club that's working with you as a pitcher, you're in big trouble. I mean, they don't get the loss, you get the loss. So we just had a lot of selfish guys, and we didn't have, in my opinion, what I see around baseball since I came to Pittsburgh, really. We didn't have the type of teaching, leadership, instruction like they have now from the front office right down to management. And for a lot of us that were, like I say, Triple-A ball players, trying to establish ourselves in the big leagues, we didn't know what to do.
You were on your own.
Yeah, you were on your own most of the time. And you had to have the right kind of guy to teach you and have the patience with you. We went through a few managers there, I'll tell you.
Right. How long were you a player rep?
For the 2 years, that was enough.
You signed a thankless job?
Yes. I think that when you sign a major league contract, at some point in your career as a major leaguer, you should have to be a player rep for 1 year to find out what's going on. Because most of these guys today that are playing the game today have no clue what's going on as far as the union. It scares me.
You were a player rep right when the agency came in, so you were. That was on the heels of all the court decisions.
Yeah,
and everything.
Yeah.
What were your impressions of Marvin Miller? What's your
brilliant man? I mean, you know, ball players are like kids. When you sit them down together in a group, it's hard to keep their attention. They get very restless and impatient. Well, Marvin Miller, I never in my life, when we would have meetings in spring training, when we would have player rep meetings or anything, this guy kept you on the edge of your seat. I mean, he knew so much about the ins and outs of the game as far as negotiations, rights, and all that stuff. I mean, Marvin Miller is really the one that's put the money in the players' pockets today. A lot of these guys don't even know who Marvin Miller is.
I know. am I right that guys who spend 6 years in the minors now can be free agents?
Yeah.
Is that right? So if that rule had been in effect when you were coming up, you could have gotten away from the Tigers organization.
Yeah, but, well, and then, and at that time, money would have been bigger then, too, than it was. I mean, free agent would have started earlier.
Yeah.
Free agency. But I don't think too much about that because I remember at the time when I was in the minors, I said to myself one day, if I could only make X amount of dollars, boy, would I be happy. Well, I went way beyond that. So, it's just the supply and demand. What's out there, people are going to give up, and the players are going to accept. That's where it is today.
If you'd had your choice, would you have stayed in the outfield? You had some pretty good stats as an outfielder, I see.
Well, I don't want to say no because I really like playing every day. But I think, I don't know that my career would have lasted as long as it did if I would have been an outfielder. I had trouble with the breaking ball. I didn't have the proper techniques to stay on. They didn't have video. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. I think if I would have worked at it more, had maybe a little more instruction or knowledge, because I wasn't a smart hitter, but I was pretty good. And I could hit a little bit. But no, I wouldn't change anything because there aren't any guarantees. You know, even if I would have stayed in outfield,
I don't think I did very well.
Who knows? I mean, I may never got out of AAA. You
had probably a better hitting year in 69 than pitching. You hit two home runs in a game and still lost.
Well, to this day, see, that those two home runs, I was the first. See, now there's an indication, too. We had some players on a Kansas City ball club that later on went on to be good, real good ball players.
Right.
My roommate was Lou Piniella.
Yeah.
That was an experience.
He was something that
for
year.
For both of us. Yeah, he was. He was a real good player. But, I was the first Kansas City Royals player to hit two home runs in one game. And it was the ones you're talking about off Tim Cotton.
So it makes you a good trivia answer, huh?
I guess. I don't think they use it, though, in their media guide, which surprises me. Every once in a while, I'll look it up, and I'm thinking, why wouldn't they have that? Who was the first Kansas City Royal to get two home runs in one game? I don't know if we have it in ours, though, either. I don't know who the first Pirate was.
I'll have to look. Who that was. Probably Honus Wagner or somebody. I think that's about it, Rook. I'll let you
What are you doing? What are you going to do with all this stuff?
I started out doing background for a novel, but I got interested in the players from a novelist's viewpoint, and 69 seemed to be like a crisis point. Major leaguers with expansion.
Okay.
40% of everybody who played in the majors in 68 changed teams sometime in that two-year period.
Is that right?
So just a great uncertainty, playoffs coming in, lowering the mound, trying to get more offense in.
That hurt a lot of guys.
Yeah.
What kinds of pitchers were
hurt by it?
Bad arm, yeah. I'll never forget that. A lot of players. I mean, there were a lot of guys that were out of baseball. Not a huge amount, but I mean, there were some named players that I can't recall their names now. They really suffered because of that.
Yeah, I think some of the sinker ball pitchers had a lot of trouble. Particular from what I've read, but I'm interested in the boycott because spring training is a time when everybody's anxious to get down there and start playing, and here the union man asked them not to sign contracts and not to show up, and everybody had to figure out, well that's what's more important to me.
See, one thing that I learned about all of that stuff.
Somebody hold out. Nick Price looks like it.
Was that ball players is a union. Baseball players have a better union than anybody else. I mean, not only is it secure and funded and all that stuff, but they stick up for their rights. You don't see, you'll see football, hockey, basketball, they cross the picket line. We want to play and all this stuff. They don't have any, they got a terrible union. That's one of the guys told me just recently, he had 4 or 5 years with the Steelers, how much he's getting with his, from his pension. It's embarrassing. It's incredibly embarrassing. And that's a shame.
69 was really the first time that Miller tested everybody's resolve to stick together. That's why it's important.
And every time since then, it's worked. Whether it's been a lockout, and that's what they're going to try and do again. They're going to try and bust the union.
Right?
Well, everybody seems to think so. But that's what they have in mind. They're going to try and bust the union.
Seems like it's way too late for them to try that. 69 was not really their chance.
See, what happens is, if they tried again when I was player with, when they locked us out. And after later years, I asked Mr. Galbraith, after I'd gotten out as a player, I said, why did you lock us out? And he said, because we tried to break the union. We thought we could break you guys, but we found out we were wrong. And I said, I would think you would have learned from beforehand that the players really stick together. And he said, yeah, I understand. He said, but, you know, human nature of greed with some players, you think that maybe, you know, that'll change somewhere. But that's what they're keying on right now. They think that's going to happen again. These guys that are making the big money. But that's the reason they're making the big money, because they stick together. And you've had a turnover in ownership. A lot of new owners that think, I have a better mousetrap. We'll see how long they can hold out. They get hurt more in the long run than the player does, because the player's always going to get their money. Their ownership is so stupid, they're going to keep giving it to them like they have in the past.
What's going to happen with the TV money goes well, down.
That'll be interesting.
Then
be interesting.
It seems like both sides are going to have to give, but the Players Association has never had to give. They've always outlasted them.
You know why? Because you're going to have some owner that he'll tell the other owner, okay, I'm not going to do this, and half an hour later call a player and do what he wasn't supposed to do. I mean, these guys can't even police themselves. They went to Marvin Miller one year and begged him to go to work for him. I remember one meeting. They asked Marvin, how can we fix this? And he said, here's our proposal. That's how you fix it. They said, no, we can't do this. We went through a month and a half, and this was the lockout year. They eventually adopted the very proposal he put down the first day. The very first day.
It was in 76, I think.
Something like that.
Seemed like the owners always had gone in so many directions, and Marvin just sat back and he knew if he waited long enough, they'd give him the opening. Or
they'll self-destruct, sure. Yeah. It's always that way. Well, everybody's got the same lineup, almost.
Berry Hill's the only difference I see.
Of course, we're going to try it again, see if this one will work.
Take a mulligan on last night, huh?
Yeah, oh, God.
That was quite a display.
That was just a pure ass kick. Not bad play on our part. Our pitchers just got their ass kicked. Big time.
Yeah. Still saw Lean and Van Slyke make great defensive hustle plays late in the game, though. Real close. Usually you come back and have a 2-1 game after a 1-1.
Right, yeah.
Right?
That does happen.
With these two pitchers, that's what I'm looking for. 2-1, Rook.
I hope you're right. Okay.